Can't believe we're at the end of Say Fabricious. I probably have said this for 17 years straight, but yeah, it flies by. And this year is a leap year, so I don't know, the rest of the year won't fly by so quickly. We'll have a lot of single partio to get us through the year. But nonetheless, it's been a good ride. So I want to share with you the very last article in Tormi Etzion and Say Fabricious. It's not a thought. Usually I always say like, oh, I have a thought by. It is a very full essay by Rav Lichtenstein. There is no way that what I'm gonna do in, I don't know, a half hour or so will do justice to it. But it is interesting. So his basic topic is Yosef cries a lot. What's the deal behind his crying? I think he probably is the person with the single most crying in all of Tanakh. He cries.
About the crying?
Right, what?
Leia.
I don't know.
Yosef cries more.
Well, right. I'm saying Leia probably cries her whole life, but I'm saying in
Correct.
turn.
Yosef's recorded crying more.
Correct. Okay. Thank you. Yes. He is recorded crying more than probably anyone else in Tanakh I could think of. He cries 8 times. I could not think of anyone that comes close to 8 times of crying. Most people don't even get enough like space in Tanakh to cry twice. But he's in 4 parshiot, and in those 4 parshiot, he cries 8 times. So that's kind of where we're going to spend most of our time. But I did want to start with a nice idea by Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg that I think ties in enough that it's worth it. So here we go. Yaakov lives in Egypt for 17 years. And the days of Yaakov's life is 147 years. Okay, so that is the first pasuk that we're going to take a look at. So the obvious question on this pasuk is, it's actually very long and probably not necessary. Meaning, if you think about it, Sarah dies also, and it says Vayu Chaye Sarah Me'at Shana Ve'Esrim Shana Ve'Sheva Shanim. So you know that we have all of our questions on why it says so much there, but here. Why does it say Vayechi Yaakov and then Vayehi Yemei Yaakov? Right, we could have condensed the pasuk to say Vayi Chaye Yaakov, right? Sheva Shanim Arba'im Shana, and then the next pasuk could be very quickly, you know, Vayama B'Mitzrayim Achrei Shvasrei Shana or something like that. Why do we have that he lived and then his total life is 147 years? That is Rabbi Goldberg's question. So the Baal HaTurim says that when it says Vayechi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim 17 shana, it's actually telling us that he lived in Egypt for 17 years. That's to say that he only lived in Egypt. Yes, he did live 130 more years, but his only real life happened in Egypt. The Baal Turim also then says that 17 years equals the 17 years before Yosef was sold, right? Yosef was sold when he was Shvasrei Shana. Those 17 years are equal to these 17 years. Okay, so that's a possible answer. Let's take a look at the Emek Dover. The Emek Dover says, calls them Yutar Shariktiv, So this is actually he's saying the Emek Dover, the Netziv, that you don't even need the whole first part of the pasuk because we're all smart enough to do the math that he lived to be 147 years. And in last week's parsha, he tells Paro that I'm 130 years, and that's when he arrives in Egypt. So we could probably do the math fairly simply and know that it's 17 years. Ela perish vaychi Yaakov shaya chay chayim tovim tukanim mashalo hurgul bazet the Eretz Yisrael. That he finally got 17 years, 17 good years in Eretz Yisrael, in Egypt, which is not the case about his years in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so according to the Netziv, these are really his only true good years. What's interesting is that Yaakov is actually, you know, much like the other Avot. Yaakov retired already a long time ago. When does Yaakov's story, I'm actually curious what your thoughts are on this. When did Yaakov actually retire?
From what? When the dream started.
Right, I'm going to say like what, career-wise. Like, I'll give you an example. I think it's easier this way. Yitzchak dies at the end of what parsha? I think so. It's not a trick question. I'm just like my brain is a little tired and I can't remember. But I think it's at the end of Toldot, right? So that's great that he dies at the end of Toldot, right? The only problem is, when does he really die? I'm saying like if you had to tell me which parsha he actually dies in.
The Brachos.
What?
The Brachos.
No. I'm saying he retired. Actually, you know what? I'm actually not sure if he dies in Toldot. Does he die in Toldot? I don't know. Maybe. Whatever. Could be. Anyway. So let's just assume, whatever it is, he actually dies in Vayeshev, right? Meaning he dies after Mechirat Yosef. So we have, like, enough space. He dies in Vayetze. Right? Yaakov, yeah, because Yaakov comes... No. Okay, I think Shmuel... Forget it. It doesn't matter. Shmuel's probably right. It is Toldot. Anyway... Why does he die then and not in Vayeshev? Because we don't care, right? He doesn't matter. He's retired from the scene already, right? So now I ask the same question in terms of Yaakov. When does Yaakov retire? When does he retire from the scene that he's essentially not meaningful to the story anymore?
By the dreams, right? When he sends Yosef out.
I'm not quite sure that he retires until this week's parsha. I mean, it's maybe he takes a hiatus where the parsha is talking, you know, about the sons and, you know, going to Egypt and et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, this is the culmination of it all. He's still quite important in this parsha.
Well, I mean, yes and no. He's important to the parsha because he gives the brachos, but that's like deathbed. Meaning, like, in terms of meaningful actions that he's done as the Av of the Jewish people, other than not coming out of retirement, other than saying goodbye to his children, I think he's essentially, like, ceded power to his children already at the beginning of Vayeshev. After he sends Yosef to Egypt, not to Egypt, to Shechem, there's, like, a shift of leadership to Yehuda and the brothers. Right. Even in this week's parsha, I think Yehuda is essentially retired at the beginning of Vayigash. Right, they all have their moments. So, if you accept that, and maybe that'll be a chabura next year, because there's a really nice piece by Rabbi Bick on this. The question is: okay, so Yaakov stepped down already, essentially for all intents and purposes, a while ago. And now, what about Yosef? Where does Yosef step down? And how does he spend like the end of his life? So we're gonna see tonight. We're gonna focus in on how he spends most of the rest of his life, and most of it is spent in a sad place. So let's take a look at the second group of psukim. Vayechal Yaakov letzavot ebanav, vayasof raglav al amitav, vayigvav, vayasef al amav. So Yaakov is done commanding his sons or, you know, giving his children that, like, tzava of how to live. And then he takes his feet onto the bed. I guess essentially he lies down. Vayigvav, vayasef al amav. And he dies and is collected to his nation. Interestingly, he does not say the word vayamat. I think we've done this before. That's the famous idea the Gemara has, that Yaakov Avinu never died, right? Why did Yaakov Avinu never die? Because it doesn't say that he died. Why? But he was buried, Right? You can't bury, well, I mean, you can bury someone that didn't die, but it's not pleasant for the person. So what, you know, what's going on? So, okay.
Well, look at your next group of Sukkim, Tesvav.
Yeah. Right. No. It's fine. The question is, why does it not say the word that he died? So this is like, I don't know, it's a famous, there's a lot of Torah on this. Actually, I think that the best speech I ever gave was on this topic. When my grandmother was Nifteres, I did her funeral and I gave the hespe. So I had 5 years to prepare it, because when she was 100, she called me in for a meeting and said that when she dies, I have to do her funeral. So, like, I don't know, I had a lot of time to think about it. But the basic gist of it is that Yaakov Avinu never dies because Am Yisrael, right, his children and his grandchildren and us, who are his, you know, many great-grandchildren, continue to live in his legacy. So as long as we live in his legacy, the Yaakov Avinu lo meit. So, that's the basic gist of it. But, yes, I do realize, even if it didn't say that in Pasuk Tet Vav Sroli, the fact that he's buried, like, it's clear, we're told that he's buried in Maris HaMachpelah. Like, what did you bury? Like,
right, but never use the word mace with the name.
But generally, like, the way of Tanakh is that when the person dies, we get the word vayamat or something along those lines there. So it's like a little curious that it chooses not to. But okay, so what happens after he dies? Vayipol Yosef al pnei aviv, vayefk alav vayishaklo. So Yosef falls on his father's face, and he cries, and he kisses him. Vayitzav Yosef v'davadav et harofim lachadnot et aviv. And then Yosef, I guess, he regains his composure enough, and he commands his servants, the doctors, to embalm his father. And he's embalmed. And this process takes 40 days. That's how long it takes. And Egypt cries for 70 days, right? He lies in state for 70 days. And then after that's all over, so what happens? He approaches the house of Paro and says, this is what my father's wishes were. Can we possibly make this happen? Okay, so Yosef, in the final moment with his father has finally died, he cries. Okay, it's not his final crying. We'll see in the next source that he cries one more time. But the question is, let's take a step back for a second and let's see. What is the worst moment in Yosef's life that we know, recorded in our Tanakh? He's thrown into the pit, right? Mechira Yosef. That's pretty bad. Okay. If you have a different thought, or if you want to come up with another bad moment that's perhaps not as bad as that, yeah, what would be another pretty bad moment?
Potiphar's wife.
Yeah, Potiphar's wife. How he goes from, you know, think about what happens in the aftermath of Potiphar's wife. Yosef had basically settled into a pretty good job. Yeah. It was not being the Mishneh LeMelech, but he was the, excuse me, he was the head of house of one of the wealthiest people in Egypt. He made it. And yet, he loses all that and ends up in a pit a second time. Right? So those are bad moments. Does Yosef cry there?
But they're not sad moments.
They're not sad moments?
They're devastating moments, but they're not sad.
I don't know. If my brothers threw me in a pit and left me to die, that would be a sad moment for me.
I don't know. I see it in a different role.
Okay, Sroli, I want you to ask your family tonight or tomorrow night, right? You're not there yet. If your sisters threw you in a pit, right? Because they didn't like you anymore. They want to get your Yerusha. Right? Would you cry? Shock,
there's sadness, there's disappointment, there's a whole bunch of emotions. I don't know if crying, in this sense of crying, is the same.
Okay.
Surly is a resourceful guy. He'd fight his way out.
Like MacGyver. Surly would be like, wow, I have all these things in my pocket. Get me out of here. That's why they took off Yosef's coat. They wanted to make sure that he didn't have anything in his pockets.
TSA. Early version of TSA.
Right. Okay, so the question is, why does he cry in some places and not in the others? So I guess there is one possibility, but let's first that we could answer on this. But let's.
What were the first six? You said this was the seventh and the eighth is coming. What were the first?
Okay, I know. Let's do this together. What are some of the places that he cries?
I don't remember.
Okay, it's like a good question to like have fun with your your shams.
Okay, answers all to the brothers. Okay, let's go backwards.
Okay, so that is number this. If this is seven, and we're about to do number eight. Announcing himself to the brothers should be number five.
Okay, he cried on Binyamin's shoulders.
Oh, sorry. So the brothers is number four. Binyamin cries on Binyamin's shoulders. Well, he cries on Binyamin's shoulders after he reveals himself. So that's six. That's five. Six is when he reunites with Yaakov. So that's six. So what do we have? We have one, two, and three. He cries when he cries when the brothers come in front of him. And then what do they say?
He didn't cry. The first time he cries is after he's already in power in Mitzrayim.
Yeah, he cries when his brothers come to him and they're like, oh, you know, this is all happening to us because God, right? God made this happen to us. Because we weren't good to our brother when he cried to us, when he, not cried, because he doesn't say cry, when he begged for his life. Okay, so that's one. And then when he sees Binyamin, he cries also. But there, it's different. What does he do there? He doesn't turn around, but where does he go?
Leaves the room.
He leaves the room. So, but we're missing one. I don't know. Okay, so you gotta figure that out. Okay, so let's take a look now. Before we take a look at the next one, I want to ask the question: Why does Yosef cry as his father dies? So obviously, there's a lot of answers to that. It is a truly emotional moment when someone, a close family member, dies, and to witness it, to see the body. So that's very hard. So why does he cry? So obviously that would be the most basic answer. So Torah Mietzion, Rav Lichtenstein quotes the following. He says, when his mother died, a friend of his sent him the following note. He says that when Rav Kook's mother died, he also cried, and he cried a lot. And people said to him, like, I understand you're crying, but your crying seems to be above and beyond regular crying.
Sorry to interrupt. I have to think something's come up. I've got to go. But have a good Shabbos. Thank you so much.
Okay. Hope everything's okay. Have a good Shabbos.
Yeah, it's fine. I just have to take care.
So, okay.
Right. Okay. So here are the seven times when he cries. He sees his brothers, Yosef. He sees Binyamin. When he reveals himself to his brothers. And makes himself known, and then also he reveals himself. He sees Yaakov. Yosef learns that Yaakov dies. And then all Egypt cries with Yosef, and he cries again during the funeral.
Oh, during the funeral. Okay, fine. So maybe that's it. We're missing. We missed that one. He cries after the funeral also. Okay, so Rav Kook sent the filing letter. Someone asked Rav Kook, why was he crying so much when his mother died? They said it seemed like, you know, the crying was excessive. And his answer was that she was the only one that called me mein kind, my child. And so that is something very powerful. And Rav Lichtenstein said that gave him tremendous nechama, that there is a special relationship that exists with one's parents. They're the only people that call us our child. And so, okay, perhaps that's the reason why he cries here. But maybe there's another possibility. Maybe that what Yosef is actually really crying is he's crying about all the lost time that they had, that they lost, that they would never get back. And I think that that's like one of those, you know, that's one of those like really hard things, that when one loses a relative, sometimes that's the hardest part, is that, you know, it's not your cry. You're not crying on the future. You're not crying on all the lost opportunities to spend time together in the future, but you reflect backwards and say, okay, we had X number of years together, whether short or long, but no matter how short or long it is, we're still going to find ourselves saying, I could have spent more time. I could have had more meaningful time and conversations, and I didn't. So that is a possibility about why he's crying here. But perhaps there's a deeper answer that kind of runs a thread through all the stories. So let's take a look at the next set of psukim. Vayiru achei Yosef kemet avihem, vayomru lu yistemen Yosef, hashev yashiv lanu kol harasher, gamalnu oto. So Yosef's brothers see that their father has died, and they say, oh no, Yosef's going to get back at us. He's going to bring back all the evil upon us that we deserve for everything we did to him. So they command Yosef, saying the following. Now, I want you to think about this. The way the pasuk reads, I didn't actually think about this ever, but Rav Usher Weiss said this yesterday. Think about the way he said, they say it. They say, you know, our father said the following. Of course, it's not true, but ko tomru li Yosef, say this to Yosef. It sounds like it's a proclamation. It sounds like it's a mitzvah. Right, this is the command that our father has given. We have language similar to that with the mitzvot that God gives us. And Moshe says to the Jewish people, right, Ko tomar lebeit Yaakov, Ko tomar lebnei Yisrael, Ana sana pesha achecha v'chatatam ki ra'a gamalucha, right? So, your brothers have done bad, but ta'asana lepesha avdei Eloi avicha, and you should bear the sin, or you should forgive the sin, accept the sin, the transgression that your brothers have done. Vayef Yosef bedabram elav, and Yosef cries when he hears this. Vayelchu gam echav vayplu lefanav, and his brothers come and then they fall before him. Vayomru hinenu l'cha l'avadim, and they say, you know what? We are your servants. Yosef says, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? Not at all. Vatem chashavtem alai ra'a. Elohim chashaval tova l'man asek hayom hazeh l'chayot amrav. You thought you were doing bad, but in fact, it's actually very good. God had plans in order to get us to this place to help this nation, this large nation, survive in these trying times. So again, here, why is Yosef crying here?
Done for them, they're still afraid of him.
Right. After all that Yosef has said and all that Yosef has done, the brothers are still afraid of him. That's hard. Meaning he kind of feels like, don't you get it? Like, I really meant it. I wanted this sense of brotherhood, but if after all these years, if 17 years later, after reuniting, you still think that I bear a grudge against you, it's proof that we've actually never really come back together as a family. So that's, yeah.
Also, and I heard this from someone else, I don't remember who, but it's also a realization that, like he, like you said, he knew that they were lying about this conversation, but it's the realization that He misunderstood the relationship he had with his brothers. He thought everything was hunky dory, but suddenly when they're saying this, it's also a realization that his personal dream that his family would be united was lost.
Right.
That was the previous Chabura. We did that once. Yeah.
Right. So I think that's very hard for him. Yosef realizes that he'll never be able to, you know, have the unity of his brothers once again. That's.
Right, so it's kind of weirdly weak, though, because right after it says, what is it for me to be upset at you? Am I in place of God? He is upset, and if it was up to him, he would have punished him. But apparently it was ended up being God's plan of how it worked out, but almost sounds like, no, if it wasn't for what God did to make it work out, yeah, I probably would punish you.
I'm not sure I agree with that. I mean, I could hear that, but I'm not sure I think that that's where Yosef is coming from.
Well, his dreams didn't imply unity. They implied servitude.
Yeah, but that's the question of what servitude means. Meaning, like, the Jewish concept of servitude is like, right, like, the Jewish king is sort of like the president of the shul, right? Like, yes, it is a official position of authority and power, but it really is not. In fact, if anything, the president is more a servant of the people than the people are a servant of him. I think that's really, like, what ultimately was to be. I think Yosef in his immaturity doesn't appreciate that. So I think that
eventually gets there, though.
Yeah, right. He eventually does get there, which makes it all the more difficult to appreciate the fact that the brothers, after all this, really still think that he bears a grudge against them. You know, I found yesterday, I don't know if anybody's heard Rev Daron Peretz speak. He's the head of World Mizrahi. He is. First of all, he's an incredibly gifted speaker. So, like, even if his story wasn't so hard to, you know, it wasn't so, like, really, really emotionally draining for him, forget for the people listening, he would still be excellent. But his story is that on October 7th, one of his kids was stationed in Gaza, and another of his kids was out of the army, engaged to be married within a week or so, maybe 2 weeks. And at home in Yad Binyamin with the family. So his son, against his wishes, ends up going down to Gaza with a pistol. That's, or two pistols. That's what he had. He went with two handguns. And that's what he fought terrorists with. He ended up taking a bullet to the leg. And by the night of October 7th, he was like, his parents knew he was okay. They brought him home figuring he would get better care in their home than in the hospital, which was severely overrun at that point in time. Unfortunately, his other son, Daniel, was missing and has been missing since October 7th. And he spoke yesterday for like, I thought it was supposed to be like 45 minutes. He ended up speaking for more like an hour and a quarter. And for the first 35 minutes, he really didn't speak much about his own personal situation. He spoke about the situation that Am Yisrael finds themselves in now and the situation that they found themselves in on October 6th. And he talks about like the absolute lack of unity and how far the Jewish people have come and what the Jewish people still need to do. And I think that the scary realization, and this is something that I think I've shared already, you know, my fear is what's going to be when this is all over? Are we going to just go back to where we were on October 6th, which is that nobody could get along? And I hope to God that that doesn't happen. But I think that that's what hits Yosef. Yosef is like, wait. Like, we've moved on. The Mechirat Yosef was this moment for him that was, like, just as jarring. And he figures, okay, but, like, we're all good now. Everybody has, like, reconciled. And then he finds out that they haven't reconciled. So that, again, if you want to look at each crying in a vacuum, so the crying here could either be similar to the crying of the previous story. It is the time lost. And he realizes, A, my brothers and I have lost 39 years or so of our lives, and we're not going to get that back. And here, because there's no finality, the brothers aren't dead. It could be not only is he crying about the time lost, he's crying forward and recognizing we're never, ever, ever going to have that sense of brotherhood together. That's a possibility. The other possibility is, that if you want to look at it as a vacuum, just this one, is Yosef cries about the absolute sadness that he and the brothers have not reconciled. And that's really hard. But Rav Lichtenstein has another possibility. And I think that this is like really brilliant. And again, he actually develops this much more deeply where he talks about every single step along the way. We don't have the time. And B, I don't have like it's way, way too much to actually remember each piece of it, but I want to share with you what I think is a highlight. So, of course, Rav Lichtenstein was brilliant, not only in Torah, but in secular knowledge as well. So it's not surprising that this is how he comes to his answer. So if anybody has ever seen a Shakespearean play, I have not, thank God. I was forced to read Shakespeare, as I'm sure everyone else was, in high school. And I would never, ever, after having had to do that, subject myself to going to watch the entire play. But in Shakespearean plays, there's two stages. There's the big stage and the little stage. The little stage is sort of off to the side. And often, the purpose of the main character will often go from the big stage to the little stage. What is the purpose of going to the little stage? So it's sort of like nowadays where you're watching TV or a movie and like it in reality TV shows, right? Like this happens, right? You all of a sudden you leave the actual scene of what's going on, and then you like, you know, it goes off to like a second screen, or you know, you see the person like reflecting by themselves. Right? That's not uncommon. The little stage is a place that the main character is able to, quote-unquote, take off his mask and be his honest and true self. Yosef puts on a big mask and becomes Tzafnat Paneach. And then what happens? The brothers come to him and they say, "Oh, I can't believe that we did this. Right? We sold Yosef. He cried to us and we did not acknowledge it." Yosef does what there? He simply turns around. Why? Because Yosef needs to hide his face. But his real face does not come true. The first time that Yosef steps off the stage and goes onto the little stage is when he sees Binyamin for the first time. His reuniting with Binyamin for the first time. Binyamin does not know who he is. But Yosef has to go off the main stage onto the little stage to cry there. He realizes at that point in time that his desires and his mission, his dreams and his mission, have gotten in the way of the sense of brotherhood that he wants. And Yosef will slowly, when he finally reunites with the brothers, he takes off his mask there again. But the difference is when he takes off his mask there, what does Yosef do? He doesn't have to step off the stage. He reveals himself to the brothers. And he reveals his extreme vulnerability and his sadness about what they have lost because of his mission and dreams and all that. That is that's the thought of Liechtenstein. What's interesting is that when Yosef is actually in the pit, when Yosef is thrown in the pit, yes, Yosef doesn't cry. Why doesn't Yosef cry? I think the moment is very hard. I actually believe, not like surely. I think that the emotion that's going through him is a lot of sadness. And there should be a lot of tears. The problem is that at this point in time, why can't Yosef cry? Yosef needs to maintain his head because what does he want to do? He needs to figure out, how do I get to the rest of my life? I'm in this pit left to die, but I need to be able to maintain my composure so that I could end up, hopefully, in the right place. And that's why he also doesn't cry on the way down to Egypt with the various parties that pass him from one place to another. He doesn't cry in Potiphar's house, and he doesn't cry in the boar. He's only able to finally cry when he says, "I know that I've gotten to the point that I need to get." And that allows himself the ability to be a little bit more honest with his feelings. That's why Yosef doesn't cry. The thing is that the brothers should have cried, and obviously they don't. They simply go and eat lunch. That's what they do. So the Sfarno says, why? Why don't they cry? And he says, you know, there's another time in Tanakh where nearly a 12th of the Jewish people are cast aside to die. And the people afterwards, after that group has been nearly decimated, which in a certain sense Yosef has been, right, by Pelagish Begiva. What do the people do after that?
They don't let him come back to join them and marry out.
That's true. It's true, but there is a pasuk. Vayishua de'erev lifnei Elokim, vayisu kolam bebechi, vayisa kolam, they lifted up their voices, vayivku bebechi gadol, and they cry a lot. Says the Sfarno, they should have done the same thing. The brother should have cried. So he says that the reason why is that they understood Yosef to be a Rodev. And that's why. But the brothers should have cried at this point in time. Yosef had a reason not to cry. They don't. And it's inexcusable. So I'll end with this. What does Yosef want? What does Yosef really, really want the whole time? Yosef goes to Shechem. And in Shechem, he meets the Ish. And he says to the Ish says, what are you doing? What are you looking for? I'm looking for my brothers. The word bakesh means can mean three different things. Shaul, going to learn that pretty soon, next couple of weeks, in Shmuel Aleph. Shaul's father loses his donkeys. What does he do? Vayavakesh. He looks for the donkeys. What is that looking meaning? What's the meaning of that looking? I lose my car keys. I can't find them. What do I need? I'm seeking my car keys. It's not a very deep thing, right? I'm just... What?
Didn't he go to Anavi?
First he goes looking for them, and after looking for a little bit, I think it might be 3 days, what happens? He happens to like bump into Shmuel, or Shmuel's in the town that they pass by, and he's like, oh wow, we should ask the Navi. So that's one. Then you have a request. Esther says, right, with Esther and Ahasuerus, right? Mashelati ubakashati. It's something that I really need. That's much more than my keys, right? I need my good health. I need my livelihood. Those are things I need. And then there's one last one. When Bigtan and Teresh try to kill the king, it's Vayivagshu. They sought. What does that mean that they sought? Obviously, they're not looking for their donkeys. Obviously, they're not asking a request. It's Vayivagshu is something that you will and you desire with your very being. Rav Lichtenstein says that Yosef's will, Yosef's hope, Yosef's dreams, Yosef's passions was what? To find brotherhood. That's what he wants more than anything else. Unfortunately, Yosef's dreams get in his way. Yosef cries at the end. At the very end, when the brothers still suspect him after 39 years, after revealing the first dream, after all of that, Yosef cries because he realizes that his life, his plan and his mission have gotten in the way of what he truly wants. Yosef wants nothing more than brotherhood with his brothers. And so his crying here was intended to break down all the barriers. Yosef had cried every step of the way, perhaps for the very same reason. He's crying to hope to break down the barriers between him and his brothers. Unfortunately, I think we know very well the end is that even crying at this moment, it does not really have the the desired effect. It does not reunite the brothers. And so in that sense, Vayechi ends on a pretty depressing note, because what happens? All the brothers die. But I will say this. I heard this from Rabbi Shaul Robinson. He's the rabbi at Lincoln Square. He said that if you ended the parsha at that moment, so then it would be pretty depressing. Wow, the Jewish people are basically sinking into Egypt. They're not getting along. How could it be? But Yosef says one thing. It's the very end of the parsha. It's not the very last pasuk, but it's the very last like note in the parsha. Is that Yosef says to the brothers, Pakod Yevkod Elohim Etchem, when God should remember you, please take my body out. Swear to me that you'll take my body out. It's actually very cool. I don't know if anybody said this, or if in my head I put this all together from all the things I heard yesterday. But who is the one that saves, that Pakod Yevkod, who's the one that remembers Yosef when God finally remembers the Jewish people?
Moshe.
Moshe's from what Shevet? It is the B'nai Ra. It's the B'nai Leah that remember the B'nai Rachel. Okay, it takes a really long time, okay? 210 years almost. Okay, minus, I don't know, the 17 years from when they came down. So we're talking at 193 years later, finally, there's reconciliation between the brothers. So there's hope. Hopefully it doesn't take quite that long. Thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful Shabbos.